right into it. This is collective bargaining with the University of West Florida, United Faculty of Florida chapter, and the University of West Florida Board of Trustees. It's October 5th, 2021. It's 4 o'clock Central Standard Time. And I'm Mike Matamore.
I'm Dan Lucas.
Amy Sprague.
Michael Wyatt.
Matt Schwartz.
Cassidy Hobbs.
John Fink.
Justin Davis.
Jessica Whittle.
Okay, well, I think that's
it. Welcome, everyone.
Mike, one quick thing. So we got cut off a little bit last time in our conversation. I know we're talking about a lot of different things. We've tried to address some of the things that we've talked about and have a proposal based on that. However, it's your guys' turn to respond. We don't want to jump in front of a proposal if you guys had something that you wanted to start with. So we're prepared to provide a revision. However, if you had something you guys wanted to present, that's fine to go first.
I don't know. I might be missing something because I really may have missed an exchange. But one of the things I think we were curious about, or I was curious about, and maybe this has already happened, but after our last session, and we did get sort of cut off in sort of mid-conversation, you sent us a communication, Jonathan, that said you had some idea that you wanted to run past us and it wouldn't take very long, like 15 minutes. Did that ever happen?
No, we ended up just waiting for this session. It was our time schedule, so we just kind of scheduled pretty quickly.
Okay. Is there something that you wanted to finish that conversation up with that triggered that email?
Well, yes. So, I mean, it was just in the sense of like the limiting principles surrounding, but we've written up a proposal that reflects that. So we have a fuller proposal prepared. Hey, let me run, go put the dog out so we don't have to hear bark in the background. But I can hear you, by the way, in my headphones. So if you talk.
Okay. Well, I'm going to address this, I guess, to Daniel. We don't have a counter for 21, right? I think we were going to just talk about it.
Yeah, it seemed like we were talking about the definition of conflict, and that's kind of where we left off.
Yeah.
And then Jonathan mentioned that he had a document he wanted to share with us, and that was kind of how we were trying to start. So I do remember the points that you had brought up around 21. I mean, was your document related to 21?
Yeah, it is. Well, we've written it also, we've taken the concept that I'll talk about and also incorporated that into a proposal. So I'll send that to, it sounds like that I can, I should just go ahead and send that. So I just sent that to Jessica. This is a proposal for everything on the table. We just put it together as a packet to resolve everything that's out there, but it's including specifically that material from the Article 21.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would be great if we could see that. Because I think we both are looking at a path to resolve the contract.
Okay. I can pull it up on the share screen too, once Jessica has that. Okay, yeah, so she's got it here. So basically, before I kind of go through it, really the only changes that we've made from our previous proposal is we've gone back through and looked at the trying to define a limiting principle for what has to be reported, right? Now, when I say limiting principle, I assume you guys know what that means, but it's just looking for what's going to demonstrate what has to be reported and what doesn't. So where we left off last time, we had placed that limiting principle in the definition, and I'll go to share my screen too. Don't hesitate to jump in and interrupt me if need be. Okay, so you should be seeing that now. I'll make this bigger. So last time, where we left off was talking about, we had placed that limiting principle in the outside activity definition, right? We had included that phrase that's used in the statute. You guys clarified that statute relates to research activity, but it's the language that said related to the faculty member's expertise, right? And that would be, in a sense, a limiting principle, right? Like if it's not related to the faculty member's expertise, then the faculty member would not have to report it, right? Matt, you pointed out the scenario where like running for office, right, may not be someone's expertise, but it's something that needs to be reported, right? So we understood that to mean that the preference of the university was not to include that limiting principle in the definition of outside activity, right? So that's one change that we've made here. So in 21.2, A, outside activity, and this reflects the changes to the current document, right? It's that more inclusive statement, right? And so it says now, outside activity will mean activity compensated or uncompensated, which is not part of the faculty member's assigned duties and for which the university has provided no compensation, right? So that's the broader definition of outside activity. If we don't have a limiting principle that follows this, right, then faculty are going to report anything that's outside of that. The only exemption we would have are those specific things that are exempted later down. So what we've done is we've taken out in 21.2A1, we've taken out the phrase that says inclusive of, but not limited to, right? That was the parenthetical that basically took that out as a limiting principle, right? So these are the only things that a faculty member would have to report. However, we've added into this list broader catch-all language that reflects the flexibility that the university may need, right? Or may preserve, right? So I'll read that to you. So what we've added in, so now it says the following outside activities are required to be reported by in-unit faculty, right? We've removed inclusive of, but not limited to, right? So this first one, activities identified by this agreement, the Board of Governors and the Florida statutes as requiring reporting and approval, right? So that's a broad umbrella, right? Anything that shows up as requiring in this agreement, Board of Governors or the Florida statutes, it's gonna capture all of those entities, right? We've also here added in the language that says activities related to an in-unit faculty member's professional expertise, excluding exempted activities defined in 21.2A2 below, right? So there we've also put in the language that captures anything related to their expertise. The other things that follow here, C through M, that language is unchanged. That's the language that's where you've identified all of those items that need to be reported, like running for office or things that, and I think running for office is probably identified in the statutes as having to be reported. Mike, you might know that. I think that it may be in there in the statutes already. And then the only other things we've added in are the flip side, the corollary to the exempted items here, right? So where we've said an exempted item is in 2B, where it says unpaid scholarly activities. We've added in paid scholarly scholarly collaborations and et cetera, right? The things that if it's only the unpaid ones, then we're adding clearly, so the paid ones have to be reported. And then we've said the exempted paid activities, right, here into if the payment for the exempted activity exceeds fair market value, right? Because that was another thing that we said below, right? That is, it's as long as it doesn't exceed fair market value, then they don't have to report it in those exempted activities. So we think this would capture, it would provide the appropriate limiting principle, we think, so that people aren't reporting garage sales and things like that. But it still provides a broad enough umbrella to capture the things I think that we want to make sure have captured. So that's our attempt to try and go through that path. The only other changes that we have in this article, we've reflected this language in a few places throughout. So for example, in the part about the form down here, let me scroll down. So for example, it says, must submit by all in-unit faculty members as follows. So now in C, to reflect that, it says, each time an in-unit faculty member plans to engage in a compensated outside activity consistent with 21.2A1 and excluding exempted compensated activities as defined in 21.2A2, right? So those are places where, and the same thing here, where the uncompensated activity consistent with 21.2A1 creates or reasonably appears to create a conflict of interest, right? To make those elements consistent, right? We don't want to have a broader definition in one place and a narrower definition in other. So we're just trying to make those consistent throughout. Everything else should be the same. The only other thing we did, that that document where it does the auto formatting, and I was thinking it was incorrectly auto formatting it. So we have taken the content and used it and reflected it here on just a standard original document, the original text. So it doesn't have all the auto formatting and those kind of weird blocks and things in there. So if you want, obviously, if you want to take it back and look for any sort of Scrivener's errors. And there was one place we get weird things that pop up sometimes in transcription where it said, that was on benefits. I'll show you that on the benefits. It had the number 11 instead of letters or something at one place. So it wasn't in this, it was in the following. Any questions on that's what we've tried to address those concerns at the last session.
Anyone have a question? Doesn't sound like it, Jonathan, so I guess we can proceed.
So and the other elements, very simple, are this is just our previous one for benefits that we put forward about the increasing it to 12 hours for the dependent benefits while retraining the faculty members at 6, that we think would comply with the statute. Specifically, faculty have made it pretty clear to us that they are flexible. They've been willing to work with the budget constraints that we've had placed upon us. In order to get these documents ratified, they need to see, you know, a balance of concerns addressed. And so we think that this would be a really good place to demonstrate that balance of concerns and to, you know, I think they would support this in ratification. Right now, this is the second year without a cost of living or a base salary increase. We're falling behind on cost of living and inflation right now. And I think that faculty are been flexible and are willing to ratify these terms if they can see value reflected in other parts of the contract, in addition to the concerns that we're addressing the university brought in. So that was the one where it said it had the word support, but instead of RT, it had the number 11. So it was like SUPO 11. This is the Scrivener's error. Change it to support, obviously. And then just the other one about status quo for the other open articles, which that would resolve everything at the table and could move forward to ratification, hopefully.
Okay, Jonathan, thanks. Does anybody have any questions about benefits or the MOU? All right. So if you will indulge us, Jonathan, I'm going to ask my team to go into a quick caucus and we'll be right back.
Okay, sounds great. We're all back whenever you guys are ready.
Great. Well, great. Well, Jonathan, I think we're very close. What we're able to do is to accept what you proposed for Article 21 with no other changes. We're able to agree to Article 10 and 20 and 14 by the Memorandum of Understanding to remain status quo. What we're not able to do, because there's a lot of concern about the legal implications and the way the statute's been read generally throughout the state university system, is to provide the additional credit hours for dependents. So we would need 26 to be status quo. But we can have a contract with your 21, 26 status quo, and 10, 20, and 14 status quo.
You know, I would be interested in hearing more about, and we probably don't have time to do this today, right? And so, you know, we can take that back, certainly, about the benefits. I would be interested, though, to hear more about sort of the legal position on that, because that statute has been interpreted in different ways throughout the state, right? You know, in our last session, we brought in, for example, the FIU one, which I would imagine you're probably familiar with, right? Having negotiated it. Now, they do that differentiation there, right? Of saying, okay, 9 for dependents, but 6 limited for the employee themselves, right? So the ambiguity in that statute, it would be nice to hear more about the legal interpretation of that. Like, is it the university's position that they would be willing to do this, except that the statute disallows them to provide above that amount? Or is the university's position that even if it were allowable, they're unwilling to provide above that 6 hours amount? And I think that's an important distinction for the faculty.
Yeah, well, the statute, we think, is clear that it is the place in law where a tuition waiver is addressed, and that that sort of preempts the topic. You know, when something is authorized by statute, it sort of suggests that that's the extent of the authorization. And I think we see that the 6 hours that's found in 109 is, we're comfortable with letting a dependent use it if a faculty member does not. But to go beyond that, it gets it completely out of the statute, and it gets it into just a pure fee waiver, a tuition waiver that, I don't know where the authorization exists for that. And there's been a lot of rumbling around the whole process of tuition and fee waivers and how much individual universities should vary from what is established generally. So we have some legal concerns about that. And I think it's reflected in, I know FIU is out there, FIU. I know FIU is out there, but they're a loyal client. I'm a loyal representative of FIU. I'm not being critical of them whatsoever, but they sometimes get very creative. But like FSU has the dependents completely carved out, and they have found like a foundation scholarship to pay for this. I mean, FSU's opinion is that not only do you get no more than 6, but the dependents can't use the 6 because the statute just says you're authorized to provide this to employees. And those are legal opinions that have been made public. Having been made public, they haven't been criticized by either the Board of Governors or the Board of Trustees. So, but anyway, that's where we're at. We're not comfortable with creating a new fee waiver vehicle. We feel the statute and the interpretation of the statute that's most commonly found throughout the state university system is that the most we can do is six. So with that, that would be the extent of where we'd be able to go.
So our team talked about different possibilities, right? About just next steps forward, depending on what the university was able to do. What we would be able to do in that case is, you know, we need to take this back to, first of all, I'm glad that we've reached an understanding about where we are on 21. You know, our proposal is that is also dependent upon seeing, with recognizing the necessities of faculty and seeing some of their concerns met as well. And we've worked in good faith negotiating that, and they would like to see their concerns met in good faith negotiated as well. So I think we need to take those elements back to them. But what we could do is, it sounds like we're both in agreement on status quo on those other articles. Now we could, if a way to move forward today is we could sign off the status quo MOU and just try to focus to narrow the scope and I think we could probably get something resolved pretty quickly on agreement on those other articles, if that's something you all would be willing to do. Oh, I can't hear you, Mike, you're muted. I think you said, yes, we agree. I'm not sure, I was reading your lips.
I said, how preposterous. which reads when you read lips is the same as yes, I agree. Would that mean that we would still have 21 and 26 open?
Yes, 21 and 26 would both be open, but everything else would be resolved.
Okay.
Assuming I remember, 21 is conflict of interest, right? And 26 is benefits.
Correct.
Okay, yeah, those two would mostly, but the others would all be resolved.
All right, let me take a 5-minute caucus and I'll get right back with you.
Okay.
Thank you. All right, my team, let's go to caucus.
Hi guys, we're all here.
Hey, Jonathan. So this is our thought about where we're standing right now, is that what we hear you say is that we'll take all this back, but that you're not going to be comfortable signing off on everything, including status quo 26 today, and maybe not in the future. And that's certainly your right, and we respect that. But we're concerned about taking 10, 14, and 20 off the table because, having said that, if you come back to us and say, well, this arrangement doesn't work for us, I think we need to have 10, 14, and 20 around so that we might be able to look into those articles to find something to close it out. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. You know, that's what I think what we would like, what would be helpful. So I genuinely think that we're close, right? Mm-hmm. So what I would say, the central issue that we need to in order to get this ratified, right? Like that's by all parties to feel as if this is a fair contract, right? And that their concerns have been equally addressed, right? Is that faculty need to see within this, and we think that the tuition benefit area is an especially good area to address, to both benefit the university and to provide a benefit to faculty and their dependents, right? Because this is a benefit to the university too, with our metrics and graduation rates and all of those things. We think that's an especially good place to address a concern for faculty to provide balance in the contract without impacting significantly the financial bottom line and the university's concerns, right? So probably what would be best if you guys come back at the next session with what your proposal would be to address those concerns of faculty.
Okay, we hear you. And we'll go and look at this, we'll look at all of this. And think creatively about it. I don't know. I mean, I don't know if there's going to be any place where we're going to be able to make movement other than what we've articulated today. But okay. I think we understand where we're each at.
A couple small quick additional things. And I do really think that there's a path forward and that we're close to kind of getting this wrapped up. I know that there's a possibility to seek clarification from the legislature about the intent of legislative language in that specific statute. You know, I think that there is significant ambiguity about that intent. And so that's maybe something we may look at to provide clarity about if it is truly limited in the way in which that's being articulated. To see if that's the legislature's intent or if it's intended to be just specifically focused on limiting the employees' tuition benefit. So it's something we'll get some more information on. We also, Justin Davis is here. And if this is something we want to, you may want a couple of minutes afterwards to just stop the actual negotiation part. Justin's our grievance officer. I know Emily McCann contacted me and she was looking to try and get some dates for that arbitration. And I know Justin, I know that they're probably, you know, always trying to resolve things to get things cleaned up as well. So if you had any thoughts, Mike, or anything on that you wanted to share with Justin, I know he's here for a couple minutes if you wanted to as well.
Which arbitration are you talking about? Are you talking about Frazee?
Yeah, the Frazee arbitration.
Right. Frazee. All right, well, you know what? Emily has made an appearance as your former representative in those proceedings. So unless I get the protocol and courtesy is that unless I run that through her first, and she says it's okay to talk, I'm really not able to discuss, but I would really like to discuss the settlement of it. I think it should resolve itself. So maybe Justin and Emily, or Emily can send me an email and say, go ahead and speak with Justin, and Justin and I can set up a phone call.
That sounds great. Okay, that sounds perfect.
That'd work great.
I have a question while we're all together. The last couple schedulings has put us out a number of weeks at a time. And if we are truly close, maybe it makes sense to come up with a date that we can notice a little bit quicker and just get something on the calendar. If we are not able to use it, I think that's fine. But it has pushed us out a couple of weeks at a time each time I've tried to schedule. So
Absolutely. We're available just about any time for scheduling. And one of the things that's helpful, Dan, is, you know, historically we've tried to notice a couple of dates at a time. That way we don't get stuck in this 1 week window that keeps popping up. So something else to think, you know, to help kind of get that stuff wrapped up too. I mean, the main thing to think about is how much time you guys need to come back with a counter. Because we won't have anything new at the next session, but whatever counter you guys, just however much time you need to be prepped for that.
What do you think, Mike? Is there a...
I think we can get back with our position in a week. And if you were going to set a time between 4 and 5 Central Standard Time, I think I could do probably any day next week except for Friday, because I'm in Pensacola all day Friday.
You stop by. We're
I could stop by.
I like the 12th, 13th, or 14th personally.
I cannot get it noticed in time for the 12th.
Yeah, I'm good the 13th or 14th.
Okay,
13th. Let's make it
13th or 14th is fine by me.
Let me see. Let's make it the 14th. I say that because I have a flight at 9 o'clock at night on the 13th, and who knows where I'll be. I might be in an Uber racing through the streets of Miami.
So yes. The 14th at 4 Central.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody. Why don't we go back to our caucus line for just a minute?
Okay.
Okay. Thanks, guys.